This is the first presidential meeting with reporters since October 9th. There are 304 reporters in attendance here to cover the president's words. Today, Mr. Kennedy is expected to be asked his views on such topics as civil rights, attacks by Republicans, the possibility of U.S. troop withdrawal from Europe, and the situation as it presents itself in Vietnam. He may also be asked to comment on the sudden resignation of Secretary of the Navy Korth. Mr. Kennedy has entered the hall, steps to the rostrum, now the President of the United States.
Afternoon.
Mr. President, I wondered, could you tell us something about this government's policy toward reports we hear from Europe and from here about removal of American forces from Europe or reduction in the size or the strength of American personnel in Europe?
Yes, I think that Secretary Rusk explained quite clearly the American policy last weekend as he reaffirmed it. The policy of the United States is to maintain 6 divisions in Germany as long as they are required. In addition to these 6 divisions, and over and above our NATO commitments, we sent to Germany as temporary reinforcements during the Berlin crisis of 1961, 6 combat units consisting of 3 artillery battalions, 2 armored battalions, and 1 armored cavalry regiment. This augmentation of U.S. forces in Germany was made to help meet the deficiency of other NATO members in fulfilling their commitments at a very crucial time, when the buildup of West Germany's own forces was incomplete. Although some of these deficiencies have been corrected and the German force buildup is progressing, we are prepared to keep these additional combat units in Germany as long as there is a need for them. Thus, we are not planning any reduction in United States combat units in Germany. As part of the reorganization of the Army's European logistic forces, we are planning some reduction in non-combat personnel, a matter on which, of course, we are in touch with our allies. But we do not intend to bring back any units or personnel whose return would impair the military effectiveness of our forces in Germany. In short, we intend to keep our combat forces in Germany as they are today. And Mr. that is more than 6 combat divisions.
Mr. President, that being so, how many human beings are we going to bring back from our European station now?
Well, any we bring back, we may include some supply forces or...
As much as a regiment, sir?
Well, we've got over, I think, 240 or 50,000, so a regiment is a very small, less than a percent of that, so I'm sure that there'll be movements in and out, but... we'll be talking about the whole European theater. But in the case of Germany, and I think it's important we make this clear, the 6 divisions, which are our NATO commitment, are being kept. In addition, these other combat units are being kept in Germany also. If there is any change in personnel, and I'm sure there will be some, it will be in logistic forces. There have been some changes, for example, in our logistic supply lines in France. There may be some changes in headquarter units and all the rest. They're relatively small. They may be spaced over a period of time. But our combat effectiveness, of course, is increasing as our materiel increases.
Will these 6 divisions, sir, be kept at conventional divisional strength?
That's correct. Be no change. No change in the number of combat forces in Germany. No change in the number of these extra forces, which, as I have said, are beyond our NATO commitment, but which will also be kept in Germany.
Mr. President, yes. You spoke of some deficiencies. Who's falling short?
We're talking about the deficiencies in 1961 when we were... having a serious crisis in Berlin and where the NATO forces were inadequate. And as you know, I think the Secretary of State made a reference to the fact that a number of our allies had not, and in some cases have not, met their NATO commitments today for the number of forces that should be stationed in Germany for the defense of Germany.
We still have to keep these troops there, though, apparently, because the...
There has been a buildup since 1961, particularly among the German forces, whose target is 12 divisions. Some other countries have not met their quota, but we're keeping our forces there primarily because we believe that it emphasizes the commitment of the United States to the defense of the Federal Republic and our concern about the defense of Europe. In addition, it should be pointed out that the Federal Republic, West Germany, is purchasing military equipment in the United States, which provides an offset to our gold losses for our forces in the Federal Republic. So they're making an effort, and so are we, and we're going to continue to do it.
Mr. President.
Senator Goldwater accused your administration today of falsification of the news in order to perpetuate itself in office. Would you care to comment on that?
What was he referring to?
He was making a speech here at the Women's National Press Club, and his point was that you and your administration are mismanaging the news and using it to perpetuate yourself in office.
Well, as I've said before, I think it would be unwise at this time to answer or reply to Senator Goldwater. I'm confident that he'll be making many charges, even more serious than this one, in the coming months. And in addition, he himself has had a busy week selling TVA giving permission to suggesting that military commanders overseas be permitted to use nuclear weapons, attacking the president of Bolivia while he was here in the United States, involving himself in the Greek election. So I thought that it really would be not fair for me this week to reply to him.
Mr. President, back to the question of troop reductions. Are any intended in the Far East at the present time, particularly in Korea, and is there any speed up in the withdrawal from Vietnam intended?
Well, as you know, when Secretary McNamara and General Taylor came back, they announced that we would expect to withdraw 1,000 men from South Vietnam before the end of the year. And there's been some reference to that by General Hawkins. If we're able to do that, that will be our schedule. I think the first unit, the first contingent, would be 250 men who are not involved in what might be called frontline operations. It would be our hope to lessen the number of Americans there by 1,000 as the training intensifies and is carried on in South Vietnam. As far as other units, we would have to make our judgment based on what the military correlation of forces may be. We are becoming increasingly mobile, as the big lift operation suggests. What is important in the case that Mr. Smith was talking about, we not only have these divisions that I described there, but we have, after the 61 experience, we moved equipment for two more divisions. So during the big lift, we actually have seven divisions, so that we're able to move around the world much faster, and with new planes which are beginning to come off the production line, particularly ones in Marietta, Georgia, out of Lockheed and so on, we're going to have increased airlift capacity over the next 2 or 3 years, so naturally our force will be more mobile.
Mr. President, on the basis of your experience in Philadelphia yesterday and last night, will you regard next Tuesday's mayoral election as a test of how civil rights will affect the voting?
In Philadelphia or just...
Philadelphia, yes, as well as in other large northern cities.
Well, I'm sure that will may be a factor in the election, though I'm not sure that the two candidates have taken different positions, but I suppose this is a matter of major concern in the country today, and it may be reflected in the voting. I'm not, as I say, aware, though it may be that the candidates have taken different positions on it. My guess would be that they've taken relatively the same position on the question.
Well, the question is whether or not there will be some backlash from white minority voters against the Democrats because of their pushing of civil rights.
Well, it's possible. We'll have to wait and see. Though, as I said from the beginning, it seemed to me both parties have taken a clear position historically and at present on civil rights. But there may be. We'll have to wait and see Tuesday, and I'm sure that a good many things will be written into it.
President, United Nations Secretary General U Thant has withdrawn the mission from Yemen, which was supposed to secure peace, and the withdrawal of Nasser troops from Yemen. Since you were sponsoring this effort, could you tell us what further steps you have in mind?
Well, he is keeping his political people there, and we're still hopeful that the governments of the Saudi Arabia and the UAR will come to some conclusion, either bilaterally or with the Secretary General, which will permit the ceasefire to be maintained and the withdrawal, which has been limited, to be expanded. So I haven't given up on the hope of keeping that ceasefire through November.
Is not thinking of any bilateral moves to...
No, we've expressed our great interest in seeing that fighting does not break out along the border. And I think it would be unfortunate if it did. We've indicated that to the countries involved. I'm hopeful, as I say, that perhaps they'll be able to work it out bilaterally.
Mr. President?
Please to keep the ceasefire. Yes.
Do you think the letters that Secretary of the Navy Korth wrote made his resignation advisable, and was it requested?
I think the letters which Mr. Korth and I exchanged, I think, explain the situation as I would like to see it explained.
Mr. President.
Mr. Korth, I think, worked hard for the Navy, and he indicated his desire to return to private life, and I accepted that decision. But I think he worked hard for the Navy.
Yes. Mr. President. President, thousands of jobs are lost every week to automation. The federal government is one of the leaders in automation. Do you think it is good for us as human beings to dehumanize work and sacrifice people, the machines, and money?
Well, I think it's all a question of degree and how it's done. Obviously, most of the comforts we now enjoy are the result of automation technology over a period of 100, 150 years. And there was historically efforts at various times to stop the introduction of machines, which made the labor of men easier. So automation does not need to be, we hope, our enemy. Now, what is of concern now is this, the combination of a rather intensive period of automation, plus the fact that our educational system is not keeping up, so that we're graduating or dropping out of high school, so many millions of young men and women who aren't able to operate in this new society, who have only physical labor to perform, and they can't find enough jobs. And that's what concerns us. Now, as you know, we're retraining. Job retraining is important in that area, vocational training, trying to combat school dropouts, trying to urge families to keep their children in school, all the rest of these efforts with which you are familiar. We have a proposal before the Congress for a new analysis of automation. In answer to your question, I think machines can make life easier for men if men do not let the machines dominate them. And it's our intention to try to see that life is easier. The fact is, life is easier because of machines. And I think it can provide new jobs, but I think it's going to take a good deal of wisdom by those of us in the government as well as labor and management.
Mr. President, last week there was a certain amount of optimism that a sale of wheat would soon be reached for the Soviet Union. And a lot of this optimism seems to be gone last couple of days. I wonder, sir, if you could tell us quite precisely what seems to be holding up the sale and whether you are optimistic that the sale will be.
We're involved in negotiations, which are, of course, very intensive, and it seems to me this is the week where these negotiations are reaching a critical phase. I don't think that it would be useful for me to comment on them. I think we ought to know in the next days whether we're going to be successful in completing our sale. But obviously, this is a matter in which the seller and the buyer have interests which are not always harmonious, and we have to reach the best bargain possible. That's what they want. That's what we want. So I think we ought to let the negotiators negotiate.
Do you expect to use General David Shoup's services in the government after he leaves?
I would hope so. I would hope so. If he will, I'd like to have him stay.
Mr. President, just shortly after the Bay of Pigs, I asked you how you liked being president. And as I remember, you said you liked it better before the event. Now you've had a chance to appraise your job. Why do you like it, and why do you want to stay in office four more years?
Well, I find the work rewarding. Whether I'm going to stay and what my intentions are and all the rest seems to me still a good many months away. But as far as the job of president goes, it's rewarding. And I've given before to this group the definition of happiness of the Greeks. I'll define it again. With full use of your powers along lines of excellence, I find that, therefore, the president provides some happiness.
Yes. Mr. Sure. President, there have been persistent reports in recent days that the State Department is negotiating with the junta in the Dominican Republic, looking toward a resumption of full diplomatic relations. Are these reports true? Is there some basis on which we would be willing to recognize the present junta?
Well, there have been conversations in the Dominican Republic to see what assurances can be given regarding the restoration of democratic rule, constitutional rule in the Dominican Republic. We have a charge d'affaires there. Quite obviously, we're interested in that restoration, those assurances of free election. So we are continuing to carry out these discussions, though actually they're relatively informal, and they have reaped no harvest as yet, but we're very much on the... that would be our policy, to attempt to see if we can resume relations with the Dominican Republic under assurances of a restoration of constitutional government.
President.
Yes.
Sir, when you...
As yet, we've had no success.
Sir, when you approved the sale of wheat to the Soviet Union, you placed a condition on the sales that the shipments be in U.S. flagships to the extent that they were available. I wonder if you could explain to us how you came to place this condition on it, what the genesis of that condition was.
No, I think we ought to let the negotiators negotiate this week. I don't mean to be evasive, but I think we ought to let those who are representing the United States' point of view, we ought to give them a free hand now. So I would rather not get into a discussion of the wheat deal.
President.
Next week, I'm sure we can.
Yes, could you tell us how many troops there are in Cuba, or Russian troops there are in Cuba now, and what?
No, I don't think we can ever give a precise figure. All I can say is that the numbers have steadily been reduced. And in the last 2 months, there have been further reductions. And since the 1st of January, there's been a marked decrease in the number of troops in Cuba, according to all our intelligence estimates. I couldn't give you a precise number that is still there, but I can give you the general trend is outward.
President, since you approved the wheat sale, other groups have come along and suggested we sell other products to the Russians, too, surplus butter, for example. And Congressman Cooley says maybe if we send them some tobacco, it'll quiet their nerves a little bit. Would you favor expanding this list to other farm surpluses if they're interested?
They've shown no interest in anything else, but they may show interest if this deal is consummated, and I would be responsive to any further requests they made for farm commodities. But first, we have to get this deal. I think this is the bellwether.
Mr. President, can you explain Secretary McNamara's rejection of the atomic power plant for the new carrier in the face of the experts like Admiral Rickover and Chairman Seaborg and others who think it's necessary? And will the same policy go over to the other warships the Navy wants of over 8,000 tons with the atomic energy?
No, we're going to build a conventional carrier, which has already been announced at this time. That's what we think that the Navy needs. Now, we're not going to make any final decision till a later date on whether we're going to have nuclear power for important ships of the Navy. As you suggest, there's no use having a nuclear carrier unless we have the ships that accompany it. And after all, there's a large train with a carrier, unless they have nuclear power, because so that it requires a rather large investment. In the case of the nuclear carrier, it's $160 or $170 million more. If you add up the other ships that might have to accompany it, it gets into a large sum of money. What is the mission of that carrier? What's it going to be used for? Limited war or strategic attack? What's the best use of that extra money? I think that I'm supporting Secretary McNamara in the decision he's made so far in this matter. Yes, Mr. Morgan? Yeah.
The United States Steel Corporation has rejected the idea that it should use economic pressure in effort to improve race relations in Birmingham, Alabama. Do you have any comment on that position, and do you have any counsel for management and labor in general as to their social responsibility in areas of tension of this kind?
Mr. Blau has been somewhat... helpful in one or two cases that I can think of in Birmingham. I don't think he should narrowly interpret his responsibility for the future. That's a very influential company in Birmingham, and he wants to see that city prosper, as do we all. Obviously, the federal government cannot solve this matter, so that business has a responsibility, labor, and of course every citizen. So that I would think that particularly a company which is as influential as United States Steel in Birmingham, I would hope would use its influence on the side of the comedy between the races. Otherwise, the future Birmingham, of course, is not as happy as we would hope it would be. In other words, it can't be decided, this matter in Washington. It has to be decided by citizens everywhere. Mr. Blau is an influential citizen. I'm sure he'll do the best he can.
President.
Yes.
You've signed one executive order and one law banning conflicts of interest on the part of executive branch employees. In the light of recent events on Capitol Hill, do you think that that law should be broadened to cover members of Congress and congressional employees?
Well, I think they ought to wait till the investigation is over. It's only begun, and it's a matter which Congress, of course, would have to consider. But I think that perhaps out of the investigation, they may come a decision to develop new rules, procedures, or laws. But I would rather wait till the Congress has had the hearing, then we can make a better judgment about that.
President?
Yes.
Do you think that Premier Khrushchev has actually taken the Soviet Union out of the so-called moon race? And in any case, do you think that the United States should proceed as if there were a moon race?
I didn't read that into his statements. I thought his statement was rather cautiously worded. I didn't get any assurances that Mr. Khrushchev of the Soviet Union was out of the space race at all. I think it's remarkable that some people who were so unwilling to accept our test ban treaty, where there was very adequate area of verification, whatever the Soviet Union was doing, were perfectly ready to accept Mr. Khrushchev's very guarded, careful, cautious remark that he was taking himself out of the space race and use that as an excuse for us to abandon our effort. The fact of the matter is the Soviets have made an intensive effort in space. There's every indication that they are continuing and that they have the potential to continue. And I would read Mr. Khrushchev's remarks very carefully. I think he said before anyone went to the moon, there should be adequate preparation. We agree with that. In my opinion, the space program we have is essential to the security of the United States because, as I've said on many times before, it's not a question of going to the moon. It's a question of having the competence to master this environment. And I would not make any bets at all upon Soviet intentions. I think our experience has been that we wait for deeds, unless we had a system of verification. We have no idea whether the Soviet Union is going to make a race for the moon or whether it's going to attempt an even greater program. I think we ought to stay with our program. I think that's the best answer to Mr. Khrushchev.
Mr. President, still continue to be the fact that we have had no responses to your proposal for a joint moon exploration.
That's correct. That's correct. In addition, the two astronauts of the Soviet Union earlier that week had made a statement saying the Soviet Union was prepared to go on a lunar expedition. So I think that we shouldn't disregard our whole carefully worked out program, which is being carried on very impressively in Huntsville, Alabama, and in other places, merely because Mr. Khrushchev gave a rather Delphic interview to some correspondents. Yes, Mr. Gaffney.
Mr. President, Fidel Castro claims to have captured some Americans whom he says are CIA agents, and he says he's going to execute them. Is there anything at all that you can tell us about this?
No.
President, what is the status of the bilateral air transport agreement between the United States and Russia?
It was initialed some months ago, more than a year ago, in fact, a year and a half ago. And there are still some technical matters which have to be discussed before it can be formally signed.
Are you optimistic of it being signed? And
I think there's a good chance it will be signed, yes.
Mr. President, as you know, the plan to build a National Environmental Health Research Center has been hung up in Congress. Apparently, they can't decide where to build it. Now, there's a report that you would like it built in North Carolina. Would you?
North Carolina would be very acceptable. I think the budget recommendation was Maryland, but North Carolina does have the facilities. But I think in our recommendation we made, HEW made recommendation, for the first recommendation was Maryland. The site in North Carolina is a good one, as there's a triangle there of colleges and hospitals and medical facilities that, and I've indicated that that would be satisfactory if that was the judgment of the Congress. I think our first choice was Maryland.
Mr. President, in spite of something you said here in May 1962, there's talk that Lyndon Johnson will be dumped next year. Senator Thruston Morton used the word purge. Now, sir, assuming that you run next year, would you want Lyndon Johnson on the ticket, and do you expect that he will be on the ticket?
Yes, to both of those questions. That's correct.
Mr. President, Navy Secretary Korth had some correspondence which indicated he worked very hard for the Continental National Bank of Fort Worth while he was in government, as well as for the Navy. and that during the same period of time that he negotiated, just took part in a decision on a contract involving that bank's, one of that bank's best customers, the General Dynamics firm. I wonder if this fulfills the requirements of your code of ethics in government, and if, in a general way, you think that it is within the law and proper.
In the case of the contract, the TFX contract, as you know, Mr. Molyneux, that matter was referred to the Department of Justice to see whether there was a conflict of interest, and the judgment was that there was not. That's number one. Number two, the amount of the loan to the company, that bank was one of a number of banks which participated in a line of credit, and it was relatively a small amount of money as bank loans go. So in answer to your question, I have no evidence that Mr. Korth acted in any way improperly in the TFX matter. It has nothing to do with opinion that I may have about whether Mr. Korth might have written more letters and been busier than he should have been in one way or another. The fact of the matter is, I have no evidence that Mr. Korth benefited improperly during his term of office in the Navy, and I have no evidence. And you have not, as I understand it, the press has not produced any, nor the McClellan Committee, which would indicate that in any way he acted improperly in the TFX. And I always have believed that innuendos should be justified before they're made, either by me in the Congress or even in the press.
Mr. President, yes. Senator Goldwater also said today that if he is nominated if he's the Republican presidential nominee, he'll gladly debate you. Would you accept this challenge?
Oh, I've indicated I was going to debate if I were renominated.
President, a number of your congressional leaders have said they favor the so-called quality stabilization bill, but all of your executive departments are opposed to it. Can you tell us what your views are on this legislation?
Well, that hasn't come to me as yet. I've never been for the quality stabilization bill. I have to look at the bill when it finally comes in the form it's in. I quite obviously can't comment on the legislation before it finally comes to the desk of the White House, but the administration witnesses have spoken my views.
Mr. President, sir, would you please...
Unemployment is just about as high today as it was a year ago, but there are rumors that the administration has given up on getting Congress to extend the accelerated public works program. Is this a fact? And
The amount of money that's in the Public Works Program runs through July, so that there's still a good deal of money that's available for Public Works under that program.
Does the act, sir, expire in January?
The amount of money, though, given the pipeline, runs through July, so this is not a matter for immediate decision before us.
Sir, would you please tell us what is going to be the final decision on Mr. Otto Otepka, the security officer of the State Department, who was up for firing? And would you please, a related question, tell us what was the final decision on whether the State Department employees can go before the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee and answer questions?
Well, I don't think any final decision has been made on Mr. Otepka. I think there's a hearing scheduled in the next few days on the matter. And I said to you before that the Secretary of State would study the matter, and so would I, before any final decision is reached. And, of course, if a decision is reached of the kind you described, it would be possible for him to appeal to the Civil Service Commission. Now, the question of, I have no objection, I think it would be perfectly appropriate for any employee of the federal government to appear before any congressional committee. I think it would be proper that the head of the department would be notified, but I'm sure that they'll give permission.
A little while ago, you said that our present force of combat troops would remain in Germany as long as they are required. I wondered whether you plan to be the sole determiner of that, or whether it would be a bilateral or a NATO-wide proposition.
Well, I would think it would be a NATO, it would certainly be discussed in NATO, and of course the country particularly affected, in this case the Federal Republic, its views would have a very heavy weight.
President.
Very heavy weight.
In negotiating,
I'm sure that no action would be taken which would not meet the needs of the country involved, Federal Republic as well as our own. Yeah.
President, in negotiating the limited nuclear test ban treaty, we and the Russians avoided the issue of international inspection by limiting it to the three environments in which that theoretically was not required. Now we have joined at the UN in proposing a wider ban, including underground tests. Is there anything new in the state of the art of detection or in our understanding of the Soviet position that leads us to hope we can get anywhere with this approach?
I'm doubtful that we can get any place. We're still insisting on inspection. The Soviet Union is still resisting inspection. And therefore, unless the art of seismology improves, I would think we would not get an agreement. Sometime it may improve, so it's not necessary for us to have the kind of detailed inspection that we believe necessary, or perhaps the Soviet Union would change its policy. I would hope either event would occur. For the present, I'm not optimistic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From the State Department Auditorium in Washington, D.C., NBC News has brought you live the news conference of President John F. Kennedy, the first presidential news conference since October 9th. This is Peter Hackus, NBC News at the State Department in Washington.